Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back. George Norrie with you. William Peters, our guest, he's back with us, founded the Shared Crossing Project to raise awareness about the profound and healing experiences that are possible for the dying and their loved ones at the end of life. He is a marriage and family therapist at the Family Therapy Institute of Santa Barbara, holds a degree with a focus in group dynamics from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. William directs the Shared Crossing Research Initiative. It is the first research-based program designed to examine the causes of strategies for enabling the shared death experience. His book is called At Heaven's Door. He was last with us back in March of last year. William, welcome back. How have you been?
Hey, George. Thanks to have me. Thank you for having me, and it's good to be back, and I'm doing well.
Excellent. How did you get involved in the shared death experience? Was it that episode I just mentioned?
Well, that was the first full-blown shared death experience I had. However, I will tell you that when I worked with a person's essentially dying from AIDS, you know, in San Francisco in the late 80s, early 90s, I was hearing about these experiences because I was a social worker at that time. And because the way that this community of men were dying, they were very close to one another, and they just had these deep relationships during the dying process that seems to facilitate the shared death experience. So I heard a lot about these experiences. And since I'd had a near-death experience before this work, and in fact, I had a second near-death experience after working with this AIDS population, I was very open and very receptive. So when I heard about these experiences, I was very curious and I was very supportive, and that led more and more people in that community to seek me out for affirmation.
I know in the back you've got some incredible people who have endorsed your book, including our dear friend Dr. Raymond Moody, one of the best, isn't he?
Oh, Raymond's spectacular, and his support in the early days of our research was phenomenal. I mean, it really helped get the word out, connect us with the right people, and it launched our research project, which today is the largest, most respected organization studying the shared death experience.
And explain what a shared death experience is, William.
Yeah, so a shared death experience occurs when somebody's dying and a caregiver, loved one, sometimes even just a bystander will express that they feel like they shared in the journey from this human life into the afterlife with this dying loved one. So as in a sense, they hitch a ride with the dying across the threshold into this next dimension, which we, you know, call the afterlife. And people will refer to this, I should say the experiencers will say it was a glorious or beautiful or awe-inspiring afterlife. When they refer to this place that they see their loved ones going and they experience it with them, they don't have the word. So you, if you see the way I'm describing this now, it is identical in terms of phenomena as the near-death experience. So if you understand the NDE, you will understand the SDE, because you know, Raymond and I have talked numerous times about this. It's that way because we're looking at the same landscape, the same geography that comes right after a human death.
Is a shared death experience, William, enlightening to the person who lives, or is it scary?
It is. We have over 250 deeply analyzed accounts, and we only have a handful that would, like I say, like a half dozen, where they would say anything that would be what you might want to call, we call it a distressing SDE. And it's distressing because they just have no way of processing the event. Or here's the most distressing SDE we have. When the experiencer feels or connects so deeply to the experience of the person transitioning, we have cases where, let's say, the dying had a heart attack or a drug overdose. Mm-hmm. They will have an empathic connection, it appears, because they'll have those same symptoms. So what happens often is someone will call and say, hey, I've got to share this experience. My niece was dying of a fentanyl overdose, and at the same time, I was sweating, I was vomiting, I was I have my convulsions in my abdomen, and I blanked out, and it passed. But they say that when they were having this, they were very scared. When they learn later about our research, that suggests that, oh, if you have a loved one who is having a distressing, traumatic end-of-life experience, a death, then you may empathically connect with it. Those are the only distressing SDEs we have. And when you recast them for the experiencer, they'll come back and say, oh my gosh, now I get it. It feels like my dying loved one was reaching out to me mm-hmm. to say goodbye or to share or do something on the level of connection. But to be clear, those are less than, you know, we have maybe a half dozen of those. Maximum would be 10 or so. But most of them are overwhelmingly transformative experiences for the better. We hear the most common after effect would be, I know my loved one is alive and well. I know that we'll be reunited again. I know that there's nothing to fear about death. And they'll say, I feel like this experience has awakened in me these intuitive, psychic, spiritual capacities. And so their anxiety around death it not only just is alleviated, people get curious and drawn to get closer to death, to learn more about it, to be with people who are going through that experience. So it's wholly transformative in a positive way.
So it comforts them more than anything, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the best term, actually, George, is that the SDE is comforting because one data point in particular, and that is this. 51% of our experiencers report that they see the dying in the transition, and they see that they're alive and well, and this so comforts them, assuages their sense of loss, We all grieve when we lose a loved one, but when you have the SDE, you have a much larger context to cushion the loss, so it's incredibly affirming and comforting.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Our guest is William Peters. His book is At Heaven's Door. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Give us a few examples of other people's shared death experiences, William.
I'm gonna share one that's been on my mind since I heard it. Now, believe it or not, I heard this case almost 6 months ago, but it so struck me because it speaks to a type of SDE in which an elevated being appears, and I've identified this being and named it as the conductor, and the conductor has this role, it appears, of transitioning soul, spirits, consciousnesses of human beings from the human existence into the afterlife. And it is a role, it appears to be a role, because when the conductor appears, it has a type of personality, if you will. It can appear in a lot of different roles. In other words, it can be a lovely woman, angelic. It can be a majestic male type figure that can be commanding, even look like a military figure. But every time it appears, it has a sense of purpose, a sense of intensity, a sense of focus, and it seems like it's organizing a variety of, if you would say, like elements that are important to create an easy passing for the dying. And so it can be directive, even saying to the shared death experiencer, stand back. If it's, you know, if the shared death experiencer is in the room with the person dying or at bedside, the conductor can often be in relationship with the shared death experiencer, telling them what to do, what not to do. Some will report that the conductor even puts them to sleep in a certain way and then wakes them up at certain times. So I'm going to give an example.
Okay.
And this comes from Gloria Kay. And so Gloria has her husband is dying, and her husband and her have talked quite a bit about what they want from death. And her husband has said to her, he's dying of cancer, He says, I want to show you everything I can about what death is, and I want to bring you along with me. So they have a kind of death compact, which is important because we feel that these agreements that the dying and the surviving loved ones make can help enable the SDE. And there's a whole lot of research on that. If you, you know, go back to the Society for Psychical Research in the late 1800s, there were the early researchers, you know, Myers in particular, talked about the importance of death compacts bringing about apparitions and connections between the dying and their surviving loved ones. In this case, Gloria had this with her husband. So about 4 or 5 days before her husband dies, he's on hospice, in, you know, in the hospice hospital bed in the living room. She's in the kitchen, which is adjacent, and it's nighttime, and all of a sudden she describes this being appears between her in the kitchen and her husband in the hospice bed. And he is large, like an oversized being that actually has to duck to move through a doorway, which he does. And she refers to him as the tall one. And she says it was like the tall one had a light emanating from within him. So he shows up 4 or 5 days before Gloria's husband dies and really doesn't so much communicate directly with Gloria, but Gloria knows that he knows, the tall one knows that she's there. So he does eventually do certain things to her, like he draws her into the room to get closer to her husband. He actually, Gloria says, it's like he was protecting her husband in a certain way, in which she knew that she shouldn't be close or she could get close. He one time let her know that her husband's death was close at hand, so he brought her close. And then, strangely, she says, he kind of knocked me out. I kind of was trying to stay awake, and I just felt this overwhelming sleepiness come over me, and I just went to sleep. But then I woke up right at the time when he was about to pass. And in her own language, she says, it was like he was giving me some rest so that he could do some work energetically to prepare the space, if you will, but also give me some rest so that I could be awake and alert for this period of passing. And then as she awakes, she's there with him for a while, and as she'll also say, boy, it was difficult to talk about time in this space because it was a different time-space dimension. But she does say she remembers this kind of space opening up above her husband's bed, a vortex of sorts that was both confusing, a bit disorienting, but very clear that that's where her husband was going. And she watched her husband go up this energetic vortex above his bed, and the tall one, the conductor, was managing the entire process. Whoa. And eventually acknowledged to her that it was time, he was going, and in his own way, be careful here because the conductor is always primarily focused on the dying, and in some cases communicates as needed with the surviving loved one, with the caregiver loved one, and in this case, kind of standard, gave some acknowledgement to her and then was off with her husband into the afterlife and disappeared. Always ascension. We see this direction of ascending upwards in the SDE. So there's a really profound example. I'm just kind of summarizing it, that really got me focused on this question. Is there a guide, like I call it the conductor, mm-hmm. that manages this transition for us? And now I'm going back with my team to look over all of our 250 cases, and we're seeing it. You know, we didn't know how to ask that question in the initial stages of our first 150 research participants, but now we're on it and we're going back and we're seeing in a higher prevalence. And when we ask, people will say, hey, by any chance did you feel any presences, any beings that might have been there to facilitate this transition? And people will sometimes say, oh, it's so funny that you ask. I felt this presence. And here's an important thing, George. Sometimes the conductor is visible and seen, and sometimes it's felt and sensed. And people will say, I felt this force that was kind of communicating to me, but I could definitely feel that this force was in relationship with my dying loved one.
How far into the shared death experience is that person taken? I mean, does it get to the point where if there's a heaven and hell and that person, the dying, is in there, does that person go along with that, or does it just get to a certain point?
Yeah, this is, I love this question because, you know, when we look at the NDE, what you hear over and over again is people, you know, starting with an out-of-body experience, going into heavenly realms. Maybe there's a life review. You might see deceased relatives, maybe a elevated spirit being. You might move through a tunnel. You're always heading for a light. And the near-death experiencer will say sometimes they go into the light. Near-death experiencers do not come out the other side of the light. They either go into the light, but they always come back. In the shared death experience, it's very similar. So you'll have a series of experiences. The most profound one is that the SDE-er will see the dying, and more often than not, will witness the dying move through this afterlife space. Mm-hmm. Same phenomenon that you see in the NDE. The light seems to be the boundary. The SDE-er will watch the dying enter the light, and once they enter the light and they don't see them anymore, they are almost immediately, they return to their body. So it seems like this space that the SDE takes place in is the initial stages of the afterlife. And the light seems to be the boundary between the initial stages of the afterlife and those next dimensions. Nobody in the SDE goes into the light and goes to the other side or stays there very long. They may be, you know, dwelling in the light for a little bit, but everybody talks about, I was in the light, and that is the last stage. If you go into the light, there's not too much more phenomena after that in 99% of our cases. So the light is the boundary between the initial stages of the afterlife and the other stages of the afterlife, which, you know, we can talk about, but that's a whole nother field, if you will.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.